better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live, folks. Welcome to episode 3,539 of the Survival Podcast, which means we'll have 3,540 tomorrow. I just like numbers that end that way, even numbers, five endings, whatever. It's just weird, and I like it. So speaking of weird, but things I don't like, as you might have noticed, today's episode is titled Stupid People Are Running the World. I thought of that title this morning, but it really got made up over the whole weekend as I watched as more and more of our current state of affairs became obvious to me. And most shows I do, even ones like this, I'll throw in a bunch of solutions or something. I've told you guys about solutions for 16 years. That's on you today. We're just going to talk about some of the craziness going on, and we're going to finish with something maybe a little bit different on something many of you know well before turning. So what I got today is, you know, we're going to talk about J.D. Vance that sure looks like basically childless cat ladies are in charge of the world right now. I'm going to show you a little clip of a video from a Kamala Harris rally. I wonder if Vance, even though it was just a quip, maybe he was right. Are childless cat ladies in charge of everything? And we're going to talk about what makes a person a childless cat lady. Believe it or not, it may not be anything to do with whether or not they've ever had a child. There's many ways to be child. Well, there's multiple ways, not many ways to be childless. One is to actually be childless, and I'm thinking that's what he was talking about, aging spinsters and whatever, but there's another way. And the reason I'm opening with it isn't like, woo, JD's right. No, I don't care about this political ass clown circus at all. It will bookend nicely when you hear what I'm going to end with today on the fourth turning. Have you asked yourself this? All these people that seem to be doing everything they can to throw what I could only call satanic shit front and center at global events like the opening and now the closing ceremony of the Olympics. And you know, I'm not one of these uber right-wing people that's all triggered by it, but I noticed it. Why are people who don't believe in God or gods at all, these are atheists, obsessed with satanic symbology? Why do they do it? It's probably not the answer you think it is. Democrats apparently love Trump's ideas. If I were Trump, I would be running on the following three things. Trump said he was going to tax Chinese electric vehicles made in Mexico at 100%. 2 weeks later, Biden enacted an exact 100% tariff on Chinese vehicles. Trump said he would free Assange at the shitcoin conference. That's what I said, shitcoin conference, even though they call it a Bitcoin conference in Nashville. And a couple weeks later, Biden's DOJ freed Assange. Isn't that interesting? And now Harris is saying she's for no tax on tips after the Biden-Harris administration went after tips specifically with additional reporting requirements and ways to track them just last year. So we'll talk a little bit about that. The Vermont State Supreme Court says schools can vaccinate your kids without your consent, and that you can't do anything about it if they do that, even if you tell them not to, which is what happened. And Builder of Castle says they're not atheists, they are Luciferians. And that's why I'm telling you, it's not what you think, because that's not true. That's not what they are. They're not. It's a tale as old as time, and it doesn't always, in fact, often has nothing to do with religion at all. It's just a common focal point in it. A teacher speaking at a Kamala rally said something that should chill you to the bone. And if you are not homeschooling and you have kids, then you might really reconsider your options after hearing what this lady says and realizing she's saying the quiet part out loud. UK doctors now must ask men if they're pregnant before they give them an X-ray. Men, if you're pregnant or you have an X-ray. I'll explain why that actually happened. It's also probably not what you think. It's what happens when you back yourself into a stupid corner and you have to have a way back out of the corner that you backed yourself into. And at the same time that's going on, the UK police are threatening to extradite U.S. influencers like me over social media posts. Good luck, bitches. You can try that if you want to. I don't think it'll work out well for you. And then what we're going to bookend with, which comes up with this idea of the childless cat lady thing. And my assertion that one not actually need to have never had children to be a childless cat lady. I'll explain that and how it wraps into the concept of the fourth turning in my generation, which many of you are part of, Generation X. We're actually the 13ers. That was the original demographer name for our generation, by the way, 13th, because we were the 13th generation from the founding of America. I guess they were bored. They didn't know what to do. And 13 sounded cool because of 13 stars and colonies. And I don't know. But along the way, we got labeled Gen X. Gen X actually preceded us as something that some people kind of had a fallout with society, decided to create the term. And yeah, we'll talk about more of it when we get there. But there's a lot of women out there who have Gen X children who I would consider childless. And some will say that my personal story is part of why that I'm biased in that direction. I would tell you my personal story is just why I can see in that general direction. So that's what we will be talking about today. Before we get into that, let's go ahead and hear from our sponsors of the day. Sponsor of the day, number one, is Start 9 Embassy Servers. One thing I can tell you is this government is not made up of stupid people. There's lots of stupid people in government, around government, and in elected offices. But the people that are actually spying on you are pretty smart people. And they're building digital dossiers on every single person in the world, but especially in America. They have a data center in Utah that is one of the largest buildings under roof in the world. It's not the largest, but it's incredibly huge. And it's all just so they can store data on you. How about you take your digital sovereignty back with Start9 Embassy Servers? Create your own end-to-end fully encrypted messaging service that they can't just not decrypt, but unless you tell them where it is, I can't even find it. Be able to access all your files anywhere in the world over a completely encrypted Tor connection. Be able to access all your passwords, all your pictures, everything without relying on the cloud. Because unlike what Kamala told you, the cloud's not up above us. It's just somebody else's physical computer, which means they control your data, access to your data, and sharing of your data. That can all go away with Start9, who will also give you a 9% discount if you're an MSB member. If you are a Fold card user, you can get another 9%, save 18% off of stuff at Start9. Next up today, the Wealth Studying Podcast. Hey, I'm going to tell you, we're not going to dig deep into solutions today. We're going to talk about problems today. I just feel like talking. I think we all need to talk about problems and understand what's coming. But one thing that always mitigates problems is money, especially if you're intelligent with what you do with your money. You can hurt yourself with money, but having money is better than not having it, especially in a crisis. You want to know how to build and manage and strengthen your position with wealth? Listen to John Pugliano's podcast. It comes out just about once a week or every other week sometimes, called the Wealth Studying Podcast. You can learn more at wealthstudying.com. And with that, let's kind of dig on into this. I'm not trying to get myself injected into the Trump Kamala, you know, conflict or whatever, but I do want to acknowledge that this is the way I look at elections. Okay. They tell me what my country is thinking. There's been pretty clear differences between the candidates in the last two elections, because Trump was fought, honestly, and there is in this one. So three in a row, there's very clear differences between the candidates. I can't say during the two Obama elections that there was that great of a difference in the candidates. When you listened to the debates between McCain and Obama and Romney and Obama, they didn't really draw a huge difference. So it was more generality of understanding the mindset of the country. But with the last three elections, you really get a visual into what this country is thinking. There's very clear. And the other thing you have to do to be able to do this is you have to separate yourself and your feelings from the analysis. If you are a political atheist like me, then that's pretty easy to do. If you're the kind of person that votes, maybe it can actually help you a little bit more if you channel it right. You probably vote because you believe it matters. and you believe that the two candidates are saying the things that they're going to do, or at least what they did in the past as an indicator of what they'll do in the future. And you believe that they're going to be the deciders, in the words of Bush Jr., right? And so you're participating based on what you expect these two groups to do, and you as much want your side to do the things they say they're going to do as you're trying to stop the other side. In fact, have you noticed that, well, in my adult life, in fact, going back into my childhood, even in the Reagan years, most political campaigning is, if you elect my opponent, then these bad things will happen, versus if you elect me, then these good things will happen. I mean, Trump even has a reasonably well-thought-out agenda, whether you agree with it or not. I'm not on that. I'm saying, like, it's pretty easy to understand what he says he's going to do, and based on his prior track record, he'll probably do most of those things, at least if he can. Harris is pretty much like, I'm just going to use a bunch of buzzwords and say things that don't mean or commit to anything, like save the American economy, that she's been, you know, responsible for more than any human other than Brandon for the last 3.5 years, right? But in the end, it's really still, oh, if you elect Biden, it's going to be a bloodbath, right? We'll talk about that a little bit today in a different angle. And the same thing, you know, it's the end of democracy. It's all a negative-oriented campaign. So when I watch an election, I'm actually way more interested in how the vote turns out and what part of the country votes for what. And especially when it changes from one cycle to the next. So seeing the place like San Francisco go blue, big deal, right? You know, the Tarrant County, Texas, being red as Rudolph's nose, no big deal. I understand it. Dallas, Texas, being blue, yep, got it, right? It's when you see places that traditionally go one way go another, you know there's this overriding sea change in thinking. And so that's why I even watch the elections and pay attention to them. But as I'm doing that this year, you know, there came under a lot of heat, I guess would be a way to put it, that J.D. Vance made a comment or a quip, however you want to call it, that said that our country is being run by a bunch of childless cat ladies. And it just so happened that, you know, Harris finally got people to come to a rally and show up. Now, if you want to know how Harris is getting big turnouts, they're having like major music personalities perform free concerts to bring people in. Nobody wants to go listen to that beanhead speak. But in this particular one, people did show up to see her. And you'll have to look up the video at about 12 and a half minutes into the video if you want to see this. But when I look at the crowd, and this is not like some Trump guy went to the Harris rally. This was actually from a video where the person was bragging about how big the crowd was. This was a leftist who was very happy about how many people were here. And I made a little GIF, and it says, I can't believe J.D. Vance called us a bunch of childless cat ladies. Well, I submit to you, if you look at the people that are there, I think childless cat lady is probably a pretty good description of the average demographic. But I didn't bring that up just to beat up on Harris. We'll get some time to do that today. I actually want to lead off with this tie-in to the fourth turning at the end. I'm sure some people would look at that, and if you're a special person that needs help on certain things like how to breathe on your own or how to put your shoes on or how to shop for, you know, clothing and food, you might go, but I looked at the, and some of those women probably have kids. Yeah, I agree. It doesn't mean they're not childless. And this is going to tie into the anchor segment at the end. People remember that we Gen Xers were called latchkey kids. But they don't remember, I guess, especially if you weren't one of us, if you're older than us or younger than us, you don't remember why. Because we were ignored. We were literally left to raise ourselves. When you see the jokes, like you younger folks, you see these jokes about, We were so left alone that the networks would put on a thing at the end of the evening saying, do you know where your kids are? So the parents would remember that they had kids to check on us. It's true. That really used to happen. They really did. You know, it's 11 p.m. Do you know where your children are? I'm serious. We were ignored. And there's going to be a certain portion of the generation, and again, the fourth turning talks about this, It's a book everybody should read. And there's going to be a certain portion of that group that's called the nomad seculum. The nomad generation is what Gen X is. And, of course, you go four generations back, you hit the previous nomad. You keep going back. There's one every four generations back. Well, some portion of that generation is going to say, fuck it. And not only are they going to be on their own as children, they're going to stay on their own, or they're going to go out, they'll build a new family of their own that they'll have a lot of pride in because they did better than their parents with it, but they turn away from their parents. And it'll go anything from people like me that barely speak to my parents to people who, they pop in on like the holidays or whatever, and they go along and get along, but they really, them and their children are separated from their parents and their grandparents. You can say it's wrong, we shouldn't do it, but I'm not here to make a moral judgment out of it. I'm just telling you that it is what it is. And those women, there are a lot of women that are right now 60, 70 years old, 50 years old even, that would be part of Gen X. But they were very young mothers when even though they were adults, there was still like the tail end of Gen X and what they call the Zennials, which is like between the millennials and Gen X for being brought up pretty much the same way. This didn't all change until the late 90s, really. And they have no real contact with their children. So even though they have kids, they're childless. They live childless lives. They're not involved. And many of them, they're not involved with their grandchildren. Some is not even bad familial relations. Since Johnny grew up with parents that didn't seem to give a fuck about him, when Johnny turned 18 or 24, when he got out of college or whatever it was, Johnny looked around and said, this place that I live, there's nothing really for me here. And Johnny went out and found a life. And a lot of times that life ends up being 2,000, 3,000 miles away. In fact, people like us, ask me how I know, have a tendency to move pretty far when we move. Because there's something that mentally happens when I completely separate myself from whatever support system I had. I have to build something new. That's what Gen X did, like no generation that's alive today. No generation in the history of the country that is alive right now had the nomad spirit that Gen X did. Because we're the nomad generation. So there's even people like they get along fine with their parents. It's great. But they're not close. And those parents are living very childless lives. Hanging out with cats and drinking Franzia wine. Hold on to that because it's going to make a lot of sense when we get to the end of today's episode. Now I want to go into this. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that will disagree with me on this. But I want to talk about why the left seems so obsessed with things that are overtly satanic or at least hint toward satanic concepts. And if any audio starts coming through with this, let me know. It should not. I'm trying to play this on silent. Nope, there's the volume. Oh, we can't look at that. We can't have this. This has to stop. We'll go further out so we can. All right, right there. Right there. They put this crap in your face. They put this crap in your face, and then they have the audacity to tell you, oh, no, this is not a recreation of the Last Supper. We're like anybody that took, you know, a 101 level art course, art history course, would tell you that's Da Vinci's Last Supper right there with a bunch of drag queens. But the whole ceremony was just overlaid with plenty of stuff you could only call satanic visualization. And they said it was about some, I don't know, Roman god or Greek god or some shit like Eris or something. Bullshit. You know what you're looking at here. The giant fat drag queen lady is supposed to be Jesus with a crown on her head in the middle of the table. The closing ceremony may not have been as revolting, but it clearly, if you haven't seen it yet, you can look it up. I'm not going to play it. Had definite kind of satanic, demonic overtones. A lot of things that they say and they do are like this. And what people will say, they're Luciferians. It doesn't matter if you believe in the devil. They do. No, they don't. No, they don't. Now, there is the whole like Aleister Crowley, Church of Satan concept of they don't believe in God or Satan, but they believe in rebellion against the system. And God stands in as the representation of the system and you can do whatever you want, and they just throw it in your face. And there's some of that here. But what it really is, and this is hard if you're personally, and the more religious you are, the harder this is going to be to accept what I'm about to tell you. This has happened all the time in every culture war that's ever happened. There's been culture wars forever. They're not new. And it is basically the side that feels emboldened in their attack will pick the things that are most sacred and most reviling in their attack on the other side. You know, you'll use somebody's skin color to justify slavery would be an example that happened here in the United States. But that's not why slaves ended up being black. We ended up with black slaves because they didn't die in the 1600s. When the continent was very new to exploration and discovery, and you put white slaves into the field, which they did. They were indentured servants. And when they put them out in the fields working, they died of malaria. And when they brought in African slaves who had built up some resistance to malaria, they didn't die. They later used it to justify slavery. But in all these instances, the people that were slaves in this country and anywhere around the world were different somehow than the people that owned the slaves. You see, you think this is unique or racially based, but this has happened in Asia over and over again. You and I would look at two different groups of people from different areas of Asia. We can't tell them apart. We don't know that they're different in any way. To us, they all look, you know, Chinese or Japanese or whatever you think they are. They all look the same to you. They don't look the same to each other. And there's been plenty of slavery in those societies, and it's usually one region enslaving the population of another because they're different. And whenever this conflict occurs, it doesn't matter if it's slavery, it's over control of a country, control of a system, control of a region, it doesn't matter. Whatever the side that feels emboldened thinks the other side will be most incensed and made irate by, that's what they'll attack. So what do they attack? Think about what they attack here. They attack your children, your faith, and your principles. What's left? What's left that would incense you more than that? And that's all that it is. Once they find, it's like the bully in school. He picks on Timmy. He tells Timmy, Timmy's stupid. Timmy knows he's smart. So Timmy's like, fuck you. I don't care. Right? Even though Timmy can get his ass beat, he's not upset by being told that he's stupid because he knows he's not, you know, and he picks on Timmy for a bunch of things and they find something. He says, you're short, your mama don't love you, whatever. Something hits, some blow, verbal blow lands and Timmy gets triggered. And now what happens? Now what happens? Now it becomes incessant. What I'm saying is it's nothing but a form of bullying. That's what they're doing to you. They're bullying you. And it's a bully that can bully you that you can't punch in the nose. There's no real way to punch the bully in the nose because the bully is a force, a collective force that exists over here. There's nothing you can do to directly reject. And now we have social media where they have 24/7, 365 coverage of everything. And the minute anything happens, you're told about it and shown it. And if it triggers you, there's 1,000 people that are going to make commentary and cutouts and pieces of it to where that's all you see for the next 48, 72 hours, sometimes 2 or 3 weeks. The mierda de toro, right? The bullshit, right? The soup de mierda de toro, right? Mierda de toro is the soup, bullshit soup that they're going to feed you until the next soup cycle. But they're going to keep coming after your kids. Now, you can get mad and irate and shriek and scream and vote for orange, right? And go ahead if you want to. I have no problem with it. Or you can say, thou shalt not touch my children. I will not let you have access to my children. You don't get to do that anymore. And it's up to you what you want to do. Because I want to show you how your elected officials don't really care what works. They only care what gets them power and keeps them in power. So you've been told that Trump, the orange man, is a threat to our democracy. Everything he says is crazy. Everything he says is wrong. You must oppose him. To save our democracy, You must vote for one candidate and one candidate only. Any vote except for that one candidate is a vote against democracy. I actually had somebody in comments on the website try to explain to me that that was okay. And I basically told them to fuck off. Like, I can't even have a conversation with somebody that will take that approach. So you can do all that, or you can understand that they're basically still going to do the same thing. And if I'm Trump, Trump is a black swan funded by BlackRock. You have other things to worry about, however I'm supposed to pronounce your name. Right? If Trump was a black swan funded by BlackRock, he wouldn't be convicted of like 62 felonies on one misdemeanor. Okay? That don't make everything a fucking conspiracy. Okay? Sometimes it's just rich fuckers trying to fight other rich fuckers for control of your life. Sometimes it's that simple. It's not everything's a conspiracy. The world is fucking round. The moon's up in fucking outer space, and we sent a ship there. Okay? Not everything's a fucking conspiracy. Holy shit. Anyway, if I'm Trump right now, you know what I'm going to run on? Look at all the shit I'm getting done before I'm even elected. What do I mean by that? So you guys remember the bloodbath hoax, right? The bloodbath hoax, Trump said, if you let Biden stay in office and he lets all these Chinese electric vehicles into the United States, right, there's going to be a bloodbath. And he meant an economic bloodbath. Tesla's fucked. Tello, which is a new truck brand coming out, is fucked. There's some other electric car brand in California. They're all fucked because the Chinese are making these vehicles, and they're doing a really good job, by the way. Very high-end electric vehicles, and they're making them for a fraction of what we make them in the United States, and they figured out this whole international trade thing, so they're making them in Mexico. So they're not Chinese electric vehicles. They're Mexican electric vehicles, and we have very good trade relations with Mexico. They're our number one partner in the world for trade, which makes sense since we share a huge border with them and they actually produce shit unlike Canada. So, this all goes crazy. And then what happens is 2 weeks after the media gets done claiming that Trump said, if you don't elect him, his people are going to cause a bloodbath and go out and shoot people. And Biden turns around and puts a 100%, I said 100%, tariff on electric Chinese vehicles made in Mexico. And I put a link in the show notes because I've literally had people tell me that's not true. And I'm like, this only happened a couple fucking months ago. Right? Like, what the hell? How are you going to tell me this didn't happen? Till I went to look for it. When I put in Google, Brave Search, DuckDuckGo, Biden 100% tax on Mexican electric vehicles, the only thing that came up was the bloodbath hoax. I had to work my ass off to finally find an article by NPR that confirmed, yeah, so now I understand why people didn't do that. So the next thing that happens, Trump hops his ass on one of his many planes, right? He makes a deal with the shitcoin people that call themselves Bitcoiners, even though they're shitcoiners, in Nashville, for the Nashville Bitcoin Conference. And Trump goes to the Nashville Bitcoin Conference. And I still think that I should do an episode maybe on Trump's Bitcoin speech, what he got right, what he got wrong. There's a lot of wrong there, too. Maybe it's a Bitcoin breakout someday. I just really haven't felt like doing it with that speech. And a lot of other people like Guy Swan and all have, so I don't know that I need to. But he goes there, and one of the things he says, because he knows he's standing in front of this huge group of libertarians, if you elect me, I will free Julian Assange. And you know what I thought? You know what? If he really means it, I might even get my ass up and go vote for the guy, because no matter how much I hate all this politics, freeing Assange would be worth it. I want him to free Ross, and I want him to free freaking Snowden, too. But, you know, Snowden's free, but he's not free. But anyway, Trump says he's going to free Assange. Next thing you know, Biden's DOJ frees Assange. While this is all going on, the Orange Man, right, the Orange Man is, and I have that to Julian Assange now free to do or say whatever he likes. What does his future hold? All right, that's a mainstream news outlet there. So while this is all going on, Trump also basically, I'm going to say, I think the person that deserves credit for this concept is Ron Paul. I'm pretty sure that Dr. Paul said this in his 2012 campaign, but I don't think that's – two people can have the same idea, especially when they're, you know, separated by, what is that, 8 years, 12 years? 12 years, right? Yeah. Well, Harris now endorses eliminating taxes on tips. So, you know, touting, and even this freaking media outlet put, touting policy first proposed by Trump. So now, right around this time last year, the IRS under Biden-Harris introduced this whole new tip reporting requirement because they were like, you asshole waitresses with three kids that are killing yourself working late nights to provide for your family, we know you're stealing tax dollars from the American government, I mean people, and we want that fucking money. That's our, I mean, the American people's money, right? So she is part of the architecture of going after tips, but now she's, now this is the whole, you know, Harris doesn't mean anything she says. She does whatever she's told. She's a mouthpiece. She's trying to renege everything that would be negative for her and make up things. I understand that. I understand that. But if Trump doesn't come out with that, this doesn't happen. Trump is literally changing policy while out of power. Because these people are so desperate for power. They will say anything. They will do anything to keep it. They will do anything to keep it. I actually wouldn't be surprised if the Biden administration releases Ross Ulbricht before the election, if it starts to gain traction. If it starts to gain traction. If it doesn't, they won't. They have no desire to do that. And by the way, I would accept Trump as president for two terms to get Ross Ulbricht out of prison. And the reason is I've hugged Lynn Ulbricht, and I've never felt a human being so broken in my life. And that man does not deserve to be doing double life plus 20 or whatever crazy shit they put on him. Like, it wouldn't even matter to me, right? Dowie, John Dowie says, my tips will no longer be burdened by what has been. That should be the Harris campaign. Now, on top of all this crazy shit going on, the Vermont Supreme Court just ruled that you don't have a right to tell your child's school in Vermont anyway that they may not vaccinate your child. And if your child is vaccinated, even though you notified them not to, okay, and your child said, hey, my dad said you're not supposed to do this, that they can force your child to be vaccinated against your will, and they get away with it, and nobody gets fired and nobody gets sued. It's protected under the PREP Act, is what they said. Now, I looked at that act, and I am totally opposed to it, and I think it's a big overreach, but I think the court got this wrong. I think that a parent has final say on any medical treatment that their child receives in school. And I don't understand this, because as absent as parents were for Gen X kids, your school nurse, when I was a kid, needed a freaking confirmation from a parent to give you an aspirin. Damn near to put a – I think, you know, the line was drawn anything beyond a Band-Aid. Like, if you need a Band-Aid, the nurse can give you a Band-Aid. If you need a glass of water and a rest, the nurse can do that. But if you need anything approaching a medication, a Tylenol, an Advil, right, anything like that, even over the counter – you had to have a parent's approval. Now we have the ability to inject a substance that can never be removed with known potential severe side effects. Now, I want to say something about that claim right there and how I mean it in this discussion. And I really want you to understand what I'm saying here. I don't care if you're pro-vax. Okay? You want to get vaccinated? Okay. You want to get your kids vaccinated. I think it's a bad idea for something. It's not going to really ever be a danger to a kid, but it's your kid. It's an approved medical treatment. You want to do it. Okay, that's fine. But no one, including the most devout, totally obsessed, believe my vaccines are the world savior for all vaccines, and they're all, the person that even thinks they're all equal, that polio vaccine is equal to COVID-19 vaccine. The flu vaccine is equal to smallpox. This is ridiculous, but even the person that says that and means that, every single doctor, they'll give you the canned answer. Well, the side effects are rare and infrequent. But if you say, hey, look, do some people have serious reactions to vaccines, including some of them being lifetime crippled and damaged or dying? They will say yes. Okay? I'm talking, if you pushed Tony Fauci in a national interview, he would say, well, of course. Some people are allergic to penicillin, and you give them penicillin one time, it can kill them. Okay. Then doesn't a parent have a right to evaluate that risk for their own child? Apparently, the state of Vermont says no. You do not have a right to tell your child's school, you may not inject a substance into the body of my child. Okay, look, this is what I'm going to tell all you guys that are homeschooling right now. Go to the site today. Get the link to that story. Save it somewhere in a folder on your phone. And the next time some of your friends, family, neighbors, whatever, say, really, you homeschool, why? Pull it up and go, this is one reason why. But you don't live in Vermont. Yeah, I don't give a shit. What that court decision said is a federal law, not a state law, that enables this. Until another higher court, which would be, and you'd only have a conflict then, right? This would have to go to SCOTUS now for it not to be cited as precedent because it is based on a federal legal thing. So you're going to have enough conflict between courts before this is resolved. And this can now happen anywhere in the country. And any school administrator can go, I was following precedent. I was following precedent. Now, here's this full story about what happened. This kid's dad said, do not do this. 2 weeks, like this was announced, they did send an announcement home, and the parents said, thou shalt not do this thing. The kid on vaccination day said, my daddy said no. They said, that's right, come along anyway, Susie. Bam. Gave this kid an injection against her will and her parents' will. Right? This is not like a 16-year-old girl that said, screw what dad wants, I'm going to do it anyway in high school. Right? This is a young kid forcibly vaccinated against her will and against her parents' wishes. And the school's excuse was, well, we tell them about it, and we do honor requests not to do it, but we made a clerical error. It was an administrative error. We made a mistake. Whoopsie, your child is now injected with an mRNA vaccine against your wishes. And the court said, that's okay. In fact, when you read the court ruling in full, which I did this morning, it basically says, and they can do it, they don't even have to tell you. They don't even have to tell you they're going to do it. They do. They cannot make a mistake. They can just do it, and there's nothing you can do about it because it's protected under the PREP Act, which it's not. But now a court, a state Supreme Court, says they can. I'm sorry. No, you're not getting near my children. No. Now, you want something to put in that folder with it? Oh, friends and neighbors, wait till you hear this one. If you think that's about as bad as it gets, I got something for you here. And this one, I will never let a person like this near my grandchildren. I will never let a person like this woman have an opportunity to get near my grandchildren. I want you to listen to what this woman says. This woman is at a Kamala Harris rally in Arizona, I believe is where this was, standing at a podium speaking to Kamala Harris supporters. She's a teacher and very proud of the fact that she's a teacher. Well, Jack, there's nothing wrong with being proud of being a teacher. Yeah, listen to what this woman says.
Growing up, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher because I saw education for what it really was. The greatest instrument of social justice in this country. Growing up, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher because I saw education for what it really was. The greatest instrument of social justice in this country.
Do you want this woman teaching your children what social justice is? Does this look like the person that you want teaching your children what social justice is supposed to be? Do you want a teacher whose entire motivation behind being a teacher is to change young minds to the realm of modern social justice, which is a complete injustice, by the way? I think hiring somebody because of the color of their skin, no matter what it is, to do any job, no matter what it is not justice. It's racism. That's what I think. Dowie, and this will mean more if you're on the video and you saw her. Dowie says, I don't want that thing teaching my kid anything. Dowie's a person I've seen change a lot on these things because something happened to Dowie not so long ago. A baby Dowie. It's funny, isn't it? How you have one view of the world and then you have this little life in your arms. And tomorrow stops being about you and it starts being about them. And then all of a sudden things that you were okay with, you're not okay anymore with. That's why they attack you there. Because it's what you care about. It's what you care about. And the reason they attack children is twofold. One is because they want to attack the thing you hold most sacred. They want violent, angry reactions from you. That's what they want. That's why pearl clutching and gnashing of teeth, and it was worse. It was worse than Pearl Harbor Day and 9/11 put together when we had the insurrection on January 6th. It's a holy high holiday for the left. There was a lot that went into making that happen the way it did. This is why I told you guys the week that it was coming up to it, stay away. Stay away. I actually got online during my shutdown, like, because I always shut down between Christmas and New Year's every year. I said, if you're thinking of doing this, don't go. It's a trap. It was a trap, a very well laid out trap. They love when you get angry. They love when you get violent. So, of course, they attack your children. But they also attack your children for another reason. Spin a generation when they're young to your line of thinking, and that bubble moves through the system. And when those young people hit voting age and decision-making age, you have that already done. The left is way better at certain things than the right. They really are. And I kind of liken it to, like, the right is like in Star Trek, the Federation, and the left is the fucking Romulans. And the Romulans are always like just bending the Federation over, using their own regulations and rules against them. And they're always thinking like 10 levels out, and the Federation's thinking about tomorrow. And that's a perfect analogy I can pull from science fiction on what's going on with this. That's what's going on right now. You're being used and leveraged. And I'll tell you what, the right sucks at the same game. The right plays too clean. They don't play dirty enough. And I'm not talking about burning shit down and all. You'll never get away with that. I'm talking about this whole make nice thing, follow the rules thing, when your enemy's not and never going to follow the rules. But the left is comfortable with incrementalism. And the right is not. The right will throw out somebody because they disagree on 5% of what they want until they're left with no choice. They'll do that with, like, say, a guy like Trump. But once he's the nominee, then they all, no matter what they say, never Trump. But in the end, all the fucking diehard right wingers will fall in behind whoever it is. Same with the left. Same with the left. Again, they're always fighting over the mushy middle, the 5% of people that change their vote. 70,000 people across 7 states decides the next election. That's where that's all going to go. But they know if they can take the kids, they can make that go away and they can control us for generations with a generation or two. That's why they have always focused. The left has always focused on educational institutions, especially from the 1930s forward and heavily since the 1960s forward. They have focused on education. They started out in the colleges. Because that's when the kids, do you know why they started in the college? Can anybody guess that? It's really not hard to understand why they started in the colleges. If you started in grade school, high school, junior high in 1960, what would have happened to you as a leftist? Wouldn't the parents, the PTA, et cetera, the school board slaughtered you? Parents were in touch with what their kids were learning in the 1960s in school. Most moms didn't work. They talked to the teacher all the time. They knew what Johnny was being taught. Johnny talked to mommy and told mommy what he was learning in school. Latchkey kids, we weren't there yet. So you had to start somewhere where the children were separated. Johnny went off to school. Well, Johnny is learning all new things to challenge his intellect now. So they started in college. By the time they got a couple cycles through university, they turned to the younger children because they conditioned the teachers of the next generation to take it with them into the schools, and it just got progressively worse. You have to start thinking decades, centuries out to do that. The left does that. We don't. I mean, we, right? When I say people, anybody in opposition to the left does it. It's not just the right. It's libertarians. It's anarchists. We're purists. I say it all the time to our own detriment. You can have a Republicans could have a candidate that they're 80% in lockstep with, 20% that they differ on, and a 20% are their lowest priority issues. It's not guns. It's not right to life, right? And it's not economics. It could be even just opinions that don't even matter. They'll throw them out. If the left thinks their candidate is 1% better for them than the right, they'll throw all in. All in. They don't care. If they get 1% of what they want every year, they know what the needle looks like over 50. And the left is winning. And you can say it's not true because you don't like it, but go back to, let's say, 1920 and look at where we are in 2024. Go back to 1924 to 2024. So the straight 100-year century. And look what's happened. Who won? Who won? We went from a country with no welfare, no income tax, really, no meaningful. I know they put an income tax in 1913 in. But in the 1920s, if you were an equivalent person economically to where you are now, and you listen to me, you probably weren't paying no fucking income tax. No Social Security tax. No Medicare or Medicaid. No Department of Education. No giant institutions at all. The federal government was a fraction of what it was just 30 years later by World War II and the end of World War II, by the 1950s. Who won? The left or the right? When the left's stated goal, increase the size, scope, and impact of government in everyday lives. And the right stated goal, whether it's true or not, is what? Reduce the size, scope, and impact of government in people's everyday lives. Who won? Is there anybody out there that's going to try to convince me that the right is in any way had anything approaching a victory over that 100 years measured on that metric? Not if you're sane. You may not like it, but it's true. But yeah, you got this woman. She's saying that she knows that teaching is the number one way to enact social justice in the world. And you know what her version of justice is not yours. See, my version of justice is this. When a person does hard work and earns something, they get to keep it. That's justice. When somebody harms somebody else, they have to make restitution, whether it's financial or giving up their freedom or whatever it is. Like, when you intentionally harm somebody in a criminal manner, justice is you pay your debt back. That's justice. Their idea of justice is, since not everybody starts out in the same place, we need to make sure everybody ends up in the same place, which, by the way, is impossible. That's another little thing that came out of the mouth of Kamala before they went. And here's what I'm calling Kamala's entire campaign. Operation Open Basement. Remember how they did Biden? They stuck him in the basement in Delaware. They left him in the basement in Delaware. He came out, waved at everybody with his mask on once in a while. They let him speak three or four words. They put him back in the basement. And by noon, they were putting a lid on his campaign. Now, I knew what the word lid meant when they started using it in 2020. You know what, though? I had never heard it during a presidential campaign or presidential administration, because they kept doing it after he got elected, in my life. Can anybody remember hearing the concept they put a lid on the campaign when Obama was running, Bush was running, Reagan was running, other Bush was running, Carter, Nixon, Ford? I mean, go all the way back to Ike. Can anybody ever remember being told they called a lid on the campaign? They only did that with Brandon, right? Kamala, they looked at it and went, well, we don't have the scamdemic to use here. We can't have Operation Closed Basement. And some staffer, smart staffer, went, I know, Operation Open Basement. Right? And the other, what does that mean? What is what we do? We put her on the road. We put her on a plane. We have her go to as many places as we can get. But it'll be embarrassing. Nobody wants to see her. we got lots of rock stars and pop music people and rap music. We'll just put on conscious people. Okay, I like this. Okay, but she's going to talk. No. We're going to walk her out. We're going to stick her on a podium, and she's going to say what we tell her to say in the teleprompter. We're going to put her in classes, right? She's going to get media training. This happened, by the way, not the open basement terminology. She did get media training, and this goes back several months before Biden dropped out because they knew he was going to drop out. This was the plan all along. She got trained, like, listen, Cackles, come here. We got to fix this shit. Come here. Come on, Cackles. Read. Okay. No. I guarantee they had somebody literally sitting there going, no, you went off script, right? You cackled. You can't cackle. And I'm sure she went bitch crazy, right? Because that was another thing that came out this weekend. Trump called Kamala Harris a bitch. Kamala Harris called herself a bitch. You can look that up if you don't believe me. She is a bitch. I bet everybody in here has called her a bitch at one point or another. It's not a slur, Politico. It's just truth. The woman's a bitch. Anyway, so they trained her not to cackle, to read, and to stay on prompter. And Operation Open Basement is you make it look like she's everywhere. She's not afraid of anything. She's out in the open speaking to people and telling her truth. No, she's reading the teleprompter. And she actually answered a question for like 17 seconds at the side of an airplane, covered up by the drone or the motor, and that didn't go well. So they've got to keep her shutting up but speaking at the same time. Trump's game, and they're doing it, Vance and Trump are doing a pretty good job of this, is to point that out over and over and over and over again. To keep pointing out, she's not taking any questions. She's not actually putting out any policy. She's waiting for her staff to tell her what her policy is. They're going to release it this week, her economic policy. You want to know how I'd handle this if I were Trump? I go to the debate, they ask me a question, how are you going to restore the economy? I would give her more time than I have. I want her talking as much as possible. I would give an answer like this. Well, we all know what I'm going to do because I already did it. I'm going to bring back American manufacturing and jobs by cutting taxes yet again. Notice they haven't gotten rid of my tax cuts because they know that they're working. But I'm going to give an even bigger tax cut to the American people, the working man, the average person. I'm going to push that through just like I pushed my last tax cuts through. That's going to spur the economy. When I cut taxes, everything went up. And I'm going to cut the cost of American energy because we are going to be the dominant energy player in the world. I'm going to drill for every drop of oil and gas that we can in this country. She can't say that, by the way. That's not for him to say, but that's the truth. He can't. So I'm actually more interested in what my opponent's going to do. What are you going to do? I mean, you gave an answer. There was a lot of platitudes in there about helping the working. But what are you going to do? Mechanically, what are you going to do? Go ahead. And I would do that on every question. If I was him, that's what I'd do. Every question, I would put it back to her. Well, what are you going to do? And I would add the little dig in there when it gets on the border. Well, what are you going to do? Because they made you the border czar and you didn't do the job and you're still in power right now. So whatever you're going to do on the border, why aren't you doing it right now? Because I would do these things. You don't need a border bill to do these things. I did those things. You undid them. What are you going to do? And why aren't you doing it now? And I would turn every question that way, at least for the first debate. But he probably won't because Trump's just not that smart, guys. I'm sorry. All right, moving on. The stupidity is through the entire world right now, especially what you would think of as the Western world. And as stupid as this country's behaving. There is a country that's like, hold my beer and watch this. Hold my pint of ale, Mike, and watch this, right? The UK. Two things out of the UK this week that are just flabbergasting when you look at them. One is this. This is a story from the Telegraph. National Health Services staff told to ask men if they're pregnant before x-rays. So now if you are a radiologist or a doctor in the UK and you're going to give an x-ray to a patient, you have to inquire as to their current pregnancy status, even if they're a male. Do you not see how stupid that is? I'm sure you do. But do you understand why they have to do it? I know what you're thinking. It's virtue signaling. No, the virtue signaling happened over the last few years. Now they're stuck with this. Let me point to a reality. All this shit like, it's ma'am, and it's like some giant dude that's obviously a dude. Okay, there are a significant number of people who are trans, then unless you really pay attention, you don't know. Right? You don't know. For every, like, the giant drag queen with the heart hands pretending to be Jesus at the Last Supper, like, yeah, that's a drag queen, right? I'm sure of that. Okay, yeah. For every one of those, maybe for every 10 of those, there's, like, one that's passable. Well, what else did you just do in the last 5 years? You've convinced people trans women are women, I think. I'm not sure. Are trans women men that are looking like women? Or are trans women women that look like men? See, it doesn't make sense. But you convince people if this person says they're a woman, they're a woman. And they can do all the things a woman does, include having babies and needing tampons, which doesn't make sense, but that's what they've done. And they've literally convinced people of this. They put themselves in a corner of having to acknowledge their own stupidity as being reality and factual. So now you have to understand something too, like, if you are still in this mindset of I have my doctor knows me, I've been there my whole life, that's a lot less true in the United States, but there are vestiges of it left. In the United Kingdom, since it's socialized medicine, you're probably going to see different people every time you go for, like, routine medical care. And the guy taking your x-ray may have never seen you before and possibly will never see you again. So you walk in there. You look like a dude. Are you a dude? Can it say you're a dude on your medical file? No. It's, or you're a woman on your medical file? No, it says you're a man on your medical file. Patient identifies as male. What does that mean? The reason you have to ask this question is because it's very possible that you'll have a human being sitting in front of you that looks, talks, and acts like a male, facial hair and all, and really is a woman pretending to be a man. And they might be pregnant. And x-rays are dangerous for developing fetuses. They have literally boxed themselves in to the only way to handle this. I guarantee you what happened. Some woman who looked like a dude was pregnant and had an x-ray. Whether it damaged the baby or not, that happened, and somebody blew the alarm and said, whoa, hold on, stop the radioactive presses, right? Stop printing pictures of people's insides. We got to figure this out. And there's probably a big meeting with a bunch of really self-important assholes around a giant conference table in some government agency in England, probably NIS, or NHS is what they call it, their NHS. And they had to come, like, well, how do we handle this? And somebody said, just tell them to ask everybody. If we ask everybody, then we ask it. What about a 90-year-old dude who's being x-rayed because he might have prostate cancer? Ah, fuck it. Everybody. That's what happened. It's the same mentality is why you have a baby in this country, and before you leave the hospital, they want to give them a hepatitis vaccine. Ask them why. You know what they'll tell you if you push hard enough? Well, you're right. Your baby's in no risk of hepatitis. But if we vaccinate everybody for hepatitis, then the drug user that has the baby, you know, they'll get vaccinated too. That's the real reason. That doesn't apply to my kids, so fuck off. You're not doing this. I see no reason to give a newborn child a medical treatment with potential side effects for no benefit at all. At least some of the other shit you could make up a case for a benefit. If I was still childbearing, family years, a man can do this in his 90s, but women have a point where that stops. But if we could still have children, and I had a child today, there's no way in hell you're giving my kid a hepatitis vaccine because my child has zero risk of hepatitis. Right? It's social benefit. There's the word right there, Mick. Bonus points to Mick today. Social benefit. It's for everybody. You have to take a risk for the benefit of everybody. Hold on to that thought for when we get to the fourth turning section that we're heading to right now. Because it's not just that going on and being released from the UK this week. The UK, where you supposedly have a right to free speech just like in America, well, they're on a big kick this week of arresting people for their posts on social media for, quote, inciting violence. But some of these people have literally been arrested for, like, posting memes. I'm not kidding you. Posting memes, and the cops show up at your door and arrest you for posting. Some of these people are getting sentenced to like a year or two in prison for posting shit on social media because people in Britain are, well, they're pissed off. They're pissed off that their country let in millions of immigrants that they call refugees from North Africa into their country, provided them with benefits, and they're basically taking over the entire United Kingdom now. They're running the country, and they're not even happy with that. They're out committing acts of violence, and eventually, if somebody commits acts of violence long enough, there's another side that rises up and says, hey, we've had enough of this shit, and you get a counter-protest movement. So that's going on in the UK. Well, the UK doesn't want that. But this is the encouraging part. So the Crown Prosecution Service posted this thing, and for those that are on audio only, there's a little GIF on it, and it says you can be prosecuted for posting material online which incites violence, which is whatever they said incites violence. But the post itself says, think before you post content that incites violence or hatred. Hatred's pretty nebulous, isn't it? Right? Isn't just harmful. It can be illegal. The CPS takes online violence seriously and will prosecute when the legal test is met. Remind those close to you to share responsibly. Well, if you keep reading the whole fucking thing, it also says, and if you are in another country and we don't like what you post, we will extradite and prosecute you. You know what? Go fuck yourself, in the words of Elon Musk, okay? Is that clear enough? I think I'm going to say this right now, and the whole United States or United Kingdom government is welcome to hear my words. If your people are not sooner or later shown that you give some semblance of a fuck about their future versus the future of all these people you're bringing into their country that do not share your goals and your morals, they are going to fucking drag you through the streets eventually. And when it happens, you'll have no one to bitch to except God and empty space. You want to fucking try to extradite me for that? Go ahead. I'm telling you what's going to happen. I ain't advocating for anybody to do shit. But even if I did, go fuck yourself. But this is the glory. So gov.uk reposts this shit and says, think before you post, mate. Right? The mate I added myself, right? My failed attempt. 40,000 comments. 40,000 comments. I didn't read them all. I didn't have that much time free on my weekend. But I perused them. I couldn't find one that wasn't some version of go fuck yourself, right? Think for Cat Kurd said, think before you become North Korea. Valentina Gomez said, fuck around and find out. Don't try that here in the U.S. Phil Labonte, who's kind of a heavy metal guy, said, oi, get a license to suck these nuts, right? The irony of this post, clown world with Big Brother, and wokeness, 1776 is looking, you get the idea, right? You got a cartoon here from Libercat Media, two guys in prison, a big giant dude and a little bitty guy. And the big guy says to the little guy, I killed a man and you. And the little guy says, I posted a meme about UK immigration. The big guy runs away from the little guy. It just continues like that. 40,000 posts, 26,000 shares, all over some version of GFY. They closed comments, right? See, accounts at GovUK follows and mention can reply. They've closed comments. They got ratioed so hard, they ran away like the little bitches that they are and closed comments. And this is starting to happen. The mayor of London is closing comments on all his posts. Like, they're going out and they're threatening people. And people not just from the United States. Plenty of these people are from the UK too, saying, yeah, come on, bring it. Bring it. So since they have to keep up the facade that we are all powerful, they'll close comments because what have I taught you about government over the years? As much as they hate disobedience, as much as they hate rebellion, as much as they hate when you don't do what they tell you to do, what do they hate the most? When you mock them, when you laugh at them. And do you know why? Like, what did I tell you earlier? They attack what you see most sacred. They attack what you see most sacred. That's why they have the satanic imagery. That's why they do this, to trigger you. That's why they go after children. Because in spite of it just being a good tactical move, from a standpoint, if you want to control the future, start in the present with the young generation. They also know it triggers you. When you mock them, you take their power away. Why do you think they censored people like Babylon Bee and J.P. Sears during the COVID pandemic? Why? Why would you censor people who are just making jokes? They're not seen as serious sources of information. Why? Because they hate it when you mock them. There's nothing that government goons hate more than, yeah, I don't really think there's anything you can do about that. Go fuck yourself. They hate it. So what I'm hoping happens with all these official UK governmental accounts doing this, all of them, they need to all be relentlessly, anything you see them post, GFY, some version thereof. If they're posting about what passport you need to travel to what country, I don't care. They need to be relentlessly hounded until none of them allow comment to show what all of them are. And that's well underway of happening organically by itself. If I can give a little push in the right direction, I'm happy to do just that. All right. So if they want to come after me, because they've threatened me. They've threatened me. I would consider myself a U.S. influencer, a U.S. Online influencer. I don't really love the term, but I think I qualify as that after 16 years of doing what I do. And so when they say specifically influencers, you're threatening me. Dalai motherfuckers, say when, right? Because you ain't going to get my government to send me to you. So I guess you're going to have to send some of your British, you know, special police to come get me. Come on. Come on. I'll just tell you. You're going to end up dog food. The ground's too hard to dig a hole here if you come after me. No one's coming after me and getting away with it. No one's coming after my family and getting away with it. I am a peaceful man. I never caused trouble for anybody. I asked for one thing to be left alone. But history has showed one thing about people like me. And now I'm not speaking about myself. I'm talking about the whole demographic, especially in this country. The man that only wishes to be left alone. When you don't leave him alone for long enough, when you force him to become the thing he does not want to become, there is no enemy on this planet more dangerous to you than that man. Because when that man crosses that bridge, he knows his old self must die. It is a one-way crossing, and you don't want it. It is a hornet's nest and an Africanized beehive at the same time, and you're naked with a broomstick when you provoke people that only want to be left alone. There are so many people in this world that if they would just leave us alone, they could have all they want in their socialist utopia. If they would just leave us alone, they can't bring themselves to do it. They can't. They can't leave anybody alone. They have to infest everything and everybody because they know they're wrong, and that makes them scared. It makes them scared. If there's any remnant, history has shown, remnants turn into movements when things go too far. They want to avoid martyrism, so they're trying to kill the martyrs before they have a chance to be a martyr. Throw them in prison, intimidate them, silence them. What did our military do? The minute Biden got elected, it started purging the old guard. Do you know how many officers and senior NCOs resigned just short of retirement because they were like, they're going to throw me out anyway. I might as well do it on my own terms. You know how many people they threw out? No one. They didn't throw any of them out. They used what I call terrorist meetings. They were terrorism meetings. Guy that moved just down the road from me, he's a captain in the Navy, 16 years. He said, I'm resigning. They're going to get rid of me anyway. I had a lieutenant colonel in my audience write me when I told that story back then and say, same thing happened to us. He said, I ain't going nowhere, but a lot of guys are. What they were saying, Sheila, we're going to go through all your social media. We better not find posts supporting Trump. I'm serious as a heart attack that they did this. They want control, and they want everybody that does not fall in line sidelined and made powerless. That's their goal. And I think they are better students of history than we think. And that's why I want to talk here a little bit about the fourth turning. And I'm going to talk to you about this. I have a plan for an episode coming up. I'll probably have a slide deck with it, like the Cliff Notes version, to understand the concept better, because most of you don't. And the reason most of you don't is not your fault. What most people know of the fourth turning, because they've never read it, is a graphic that shows like Roman times, right? And it's like good times, you know, hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men, right? And weak men create hard times, right? And it's a cycle that goes over and over. And there's some truth in that. But the reality is that is way too much of an oversimplification. You just tried to explain the calendar by saying it has 12 months, which is true, but you've left out the seasons. The seasons are kind of important. And what the fourth turning is about is a rediscovering of cyclical time versus linear time. So all time, as humans view time, can be broken into three forms of time. Okay? This is not Einstein shit. This is not, I know it starts to sound like physics and high, no, this is very simple, observable human behavior. Prior to us figuring out, hey, look, this sun's there and it's this high in the sky and there's so many months where it's warm and so many when it's cold and this happens every year, and actually breaking it down to a calendar and being able to record years and months and days. Before that, humans viewed time as chaotic. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. It's completely unconnected to what happened last month, this month. You know, the volcano's erupting, throw a couple chicks in there, it stopped erupting, everything's good. It has nothing to do with time. Like, it was all chaotic in the minds of men. Okay? Time itself doesn't give a shit, right? It is what it is. It's a thing. It's our way of explaining that which we do not understand is what I think time is. But this is how we viewed it. Then early cultures who figured out how to make calendars, right, started to realize something like, hey, the shortest day of the year is the same day every fucking year. That's the winter solstice. And the longest day of the year is the same day every year. That's the summer solstice. And early civilizations built festivals, harvests, everything around these concepts of seasons. And as they did that, it was very natural then for their scholars to go, wait a minute. If every year works this way, then maybe a human life works this way. And if we look at what happened in the last group of generations, we can probably get a pretty clear look at what this group of generations is going to be like. And when they looked at it, they went, holy shit, it worked. And we came up with this idea that we studied history to understand the cycle of history. As we got modern and we started thinking we were smarter than everybody, we thought we could alter the calendar with our actions. We went to a version that most modern humans hold of time. That rooster needs to shut his hole before he hangs from a tree. Anyway, that's Not Sure, for those that don't know. His name is Not Sure, because at one point we were not sure if he was a rooster or not. And I told him the other day, if he keeps up some of the stuff he's doing, he's not going to be sure of whether or not he's going to be around tomorrow. But anyway, we came up with this idea of linear time. That it's good to know what happened in the past, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen in the future. It means that it could, and we could figure out how to prevent it. And so time became this linear one-way thing in the minds of people, cultures, governments, bureaucracies, corporations. It doesn't matter what happened in 1929. This is 2024, for God's sakes. The two are not connected, except if we do the things that created 1929, sure, it could happen again, but we're smarter than that. Where no one would say, because we're smarter than we used to be, it won't be winter in December this year. Nobody would ever say it's ridiculous. The season must come. The fourth turning is about that nature of cyclical time, and we're not immune from it. In fact, we create it because there's about four generations to each cycle. And it's simply that you will have children, young adults, middle-aged adults, and elders in charge of most things at any given time. It's about an 80-year cycle, up to between 80 and 100 years. And it always accumulates in a crisis, the American Civil War, the Great Depression and World War II, or the last crisis. The crisis is then followed by a high. So if you think of the years between the like VJ Day, which is almost perfectly 80 years ago right now, by the way, that 80-year cycle. Next year, September 2nd, will be exactly 80 years from the end of World War II. This is what started the great U.S. high. And everybody says, well, you know, that's the boomers. No, the boomers were just starting to be born. Okay? The GI generation was the young, hard-charging people that had just won the war. They came home and made the boomers. The GIs were the last family unit where dad worked and mom stayed home as a regular course of business, and you could afford the bills. By the time, like all these people, boomers stole everything. By the time the boomers were in their 30s, interest rates were fucking 18% to buy a house, and mom was working. We were in the stagflation of the 1970s. So you get the high. The GI and the silent generation got the high. The boomers got the transfiguration, right? They got the awakening, and everything began to shift, and that's everybody went crazy. They were on drugs, right? But it was a spiritual awakening. And a realization that a lot of things that their prior generation held sacred weren't so good. But like young people do, their means of rebellion were to cast aside everything, not just the bad things. Hey, we're treating black people unfairly in this country. Well, let's fix that. No, let's get rid of everything and fix that. So the things that were working were ripped apart. And the boomers were a coddled generation. They were the artist generation. The men who fought wars, came home and had children, wanted their children never, with good reason, never to see such horror. Boy, especially the ones that were like part of liberating concentration camps and shit. I've got to protect my baby from this. So the boomers were very well cared for as children. It was an overcompensation. Then the nomads came, the Gen Xers. By then, all these giant systems that worked to a degree had been ripped apart and made worthless. And we were ignored. And we were cast aside. We raised ourselves. You think that's unique? But you go back 80 years, and the kids that were born 80 years before us did the same thing. And if you go back another 80 years, it was the same. And if you go back another 80 years, it was the same. This happens over and over again. And then we went out with this attitude of fuck the world. It's all for ourselves. Like I said, we moved away from our homes more than any generation. We were more independent than any generation. We are this is something some of you are going to struggle with, but it's a mental state, not a political state. The most libertarian generation in living history. Like, people that are still alive today have never seen a generation that philosophically is as libertarian as Gen X. Gen X is basically, leave me the fuck alone, which is what you did anyway. Don't bother me, and I won't bother you. That sums up all of Gen X. Gen X didn't even like to be associated as a generation. We didn't want to be called a generation. We ended up named Gen X, and eventually as we got a little older, like, fuck it, okay, we're Gen X, whatever. We have the X Games, like, X is badass, like, it's cool to be X. Fuck you, I don't care. Right? And so we were labeled by our boomer parents and our GI and silent grandparents as an apathetic generation, but we weren't apathetic. We were apathetic to everybody else's bullshit. We were a hardworking generation. We went out and got jobs. We fought our way up, whether we did it collegiately or outside the system. We built our own lives, but we didn't try to build the country. We weren't part of a collective. And we felt very uncared for by our parents. Not all of us, right? I would be the extreme example of that. There was a lot in the middle. But I can tell you, growing up, there were kids that I thought, man, you have a great relationship with your parents. They're like, No, I don't. No, they don't give a shit what I do. So we were willing to go anywhere to make our lives better. And when we did, we largely cut off the rearview mirror. Okay? Now, right? Then the millennials came. What happened with them? So the boomers that were still having kids, right? And the older Xers who had the mid-level millennials as kids went, holy shit, did we fuck up with those Gen X kids? Those kids that grew up in the 70s and 80s and early 90s, holy shit, that was a bad idea. So what happens is, and it always does, a knee-jerk overreaction. So you had the, I think I said that the boomers were the artists. No, they were the prophets. It's called the prophet generation. Nomad generation. The millennials are artist generation. It's about feelings. And they're coddled. And they were over-cared for, but under-educated. Now, they think they're the most educated generation in history. Okay? And what they mean by that is book learning. And on some levels, you could say that's true. Now, most of them aren't that smart even about what they think they're smart about. But they got the right answers in school. They have more degrees than any other generation. And their life's not working out the way they were promised it would. Because when you coddle somebody, you promise them more than you will ever be able to. So they're very resentful for a totally different reason than Gen X was. Gen X was resentful because, fuck, we had to do this ourselves. The millennials are pissed because you told us to do these things, and we did these things, and it sucks. We can't afford to live. I can't buy a house. And then we got the Zoomers coming up, Gen Z, who now the young or the oldest Zoomers are like in their early 20s. And they're the fourth. They're the fourth turning. They're the weak men that create hard times. But you are wrong if you see it that way. Every one of the four generations that's in life today, doing things today, the boomers drawing Social Security, but still in the highest offices of government, the Gen Xers who still are really disinterested with all this bullshit, and we are, the millennials who want to fix everything collectively because that must be the way to do it because the TV and the teacher said so, and the Gen Zs that are looking at their older siblings or very young parents and going, fuck, society sucks, and mom and dad can't figure it out. We have to do more of what mom and dad want or more of what brother and sister want, even more. We have to go all in on fixing everything, and it all accumulates into a crisis. Here's the weird thing, though. Really, the crisis should be well underway. And we've had a lot of opportunities for a major crisis and a fourth turning. A 20-year war in Afghanistan and Iraq. 20 years of war, that should do it. A massive stock market crash in 2008-2009. Runaway inflation right now. But we need a crisis that comes in such a way, at such a time, for the next phase, the next seculum to begin, we need one that unites everybody. That makes the Gen Xers go, wait a minute, we actually need to care. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what the theory is. That we need to be the GI and silent type, what they became. We need to start believing in big government. Right? And it doesn't matter what your version of that is, but we need to believe, like, we need to fix things for the people. And get involved. It ain't going to happen. But the theory is that we will. I just listened to the author in a very recent interview, only a few months old, saying that he believes that I don't think so, bro. And I'll tell you why. I don't think his theory in of itself is wrong. I think it's been altered. And this is the part you've probably never heard, no matter how much you've reached into this before. I think that the people in power that have an agenda understand the four turnings very, very well. And I think they're insistent upon not allowing society to have a crisis, but to cause a crisis, to choose the crisis, and to use the crisis in a very sophisticated way. And that crisis, I believe, will be climate change. There isn't a crisis, but how many people under 40 believe that? How many people under 40 right now, if you tell them there isn't a climate crisis, at least one that's not one that's based on CO2? Almost none. A lot of people my age and older believe it. But you're more likely to go, wait a minute, this smells like bullshit. If you were around in the 70s and 80s, when they told us in school, by the way, that a new ice age was coming. When they told us in school we had 35 years of oil that would have ran out, in 2008. I'm talking about an infographic in a textbook with I could still see it. I was in eighth grade, but I knew enough to look at the copyright. So 1978. and said we had 35 to 40 years of oil left. Not till peak oil, till no oil. We had 110 years of coal. I have that kind of creepy memory that I can remember shit like that. Okay. Well, that didn't happen. And we watched the warnings of global cooling change magically almost overnight to global warming. So we're skeptical. And we don't trust institutions to begin with. So it's us and older, but there's a point where it goes the other way. You have the last of the GI generation and the oldest boomers who grew up with an incredible trust in government. See, even the boomers that went out and protested and railed against their government, they still trusted that government was the answer. Gen X is the only group in this, and the nomads are always this generation, that are like, government's not going to fix this. It's not the answer. It isn't going to work. And the theory is that when the systems fail, like it was easy for us to say that as young Gen Xers is what the theory is, because even though systems were broken, they still worked. But when they stop working, you're better off being altruistic for personal survival versus being individualistic. Because Gen X is also the individual generation, the generation that, like, I'm going to go fix my shit, fuck everything else. Right? That's why we're often called the worst generation, because we're all in it for ourselves. But there's another way to look at that. That's not how most of us see it. Like, I'm all in it for myself. We see it as, if I see to my own needs and you leave me alone, then you don't have to take care of me. Think about how, why wouldn't we think that way? How did we grow up? We grew up being left alone and taking care of ourselves. And it worked. It worked. Like, in fact, it worked. Honestly, most of us look around and go, I think it worked better than it did for the rest of y'all. Like, the average Gen Xer can fix a fucking lawnmower. They can put a belt on a car. At least the guys can. The average girl that was a Gen Xer still knows how to fix us. Even if she doesn't do it, she knows how to sew a hole in a sock shut. How to cook an egg. Right? This younger generation can't do anything, and the older generation than us wants everything done for them. So we're sitting here in the middle going, fuck, leave us alone. Well, why wouldn't we? Well, the theory has always been that when the crisis hits, we all throw in together and fix the crisis. It is not strong men that fix the crisis. It's the total of the system. It's all the generations. It's the wise elder, the middle-aged power broker, the young hard charger, and the very young visionary together cause it and then correct it over and over and over again. But I think this time we have been able to forestall crisis through manipulation of things like the monetary supply. We've actually never had a monetary system like we do today, a fractional reserve system. We've had many times that governments have debased monetary systems, and it's always ended in misery. But we've never had one where you can manipulate it so rapidly, so easily, and with so little pushback. Think about what happens when the Fed just says, we're going to cut rates, or we're going to raise rates. Who can do anything about it? You can't elect somebody and make it go away. The president can't sign an executive order that overrides it. The Congress can't even do anything. When the Federal Reserve says, we're going to buy back debt, and effectively print money when we do. We're going to print money to buy debt. Who can do anything about it? No one. So the fractional reserve system, for all the kicking we've done on it, has actually probably stayed off an economic crisis for longer. That doesn't mean it's good. The longer you forestall a disaster, the worse it usually becomes, right? So it doesn't mean it went away. What I'm saying is they've been able to manipulate their way through what probably should have been the catalyst to crisis. The 2008 crash of our stock market and our economy probably should have been a 1929-style event. Jack, you're cheering on misery. I'm not saying it should have been as in it's what I wanted. I'm saying it probably should have been as in the way things lined up, that should have been the result, logically speaking. That's where we're at. And I think what they're doing is they're trying to artificially manufacture what crisis it is that creates this fourth turning. Because the fourth turning isn't the evil that you think it is. Fourth turnings are the reboot. You want spring? What must first happen? Winter. Winter must come for spring to come. This is the thing, though. You know that we will have a winter this year. Will it be a hard winter or a mild winter? There's certain things we can look at to discern what's most likely, climatic patterns and things. But we also know there'll be a winter in 10 years from now that will begin around end of November, beginning of December in the Northern Hemisphere. Will it be a mild winter, a hard winter, or so mild it almost doesn't look like a winter, but it still is? We don't know. See, fourth turnings have been incredibly violent crises, and they've been relatively moderate crises, compared speaking. If you look at what happened in World War II, it's one of the most horrific things that man has ever done to man. But if you stayed in the United States, you had to give up some stuff for a while and wait for people to come home. It wasn't that bad in the United States now, was it? And there's a lot of parts of the world that we called it a world war, but it was a selective part of the world war. And if you were somewhere it was going on, even if you weren't a soldier, honestly, in many ways, civilians suffered harder than soldiers in certain places where fighting was really intense and you were not able to defend yourself because you're just some farmer or some, you know, waiter at a restaurant or who knows what else. Some woman or child left behind with your husband gone off fighting the war, maybe dead and you don't even know. It was a hell of a crisis for those people, but for here, it was a mild winter. It was winter, but it was a mild winter. 97% of American GIs that served in World War II, active duty and deployed, 97% were either untouched or only superficially wounded. And life was pretty good for them when they came home. That was the reality of the 19. See, and that's what people think, that the crisis was World War II. No, World War II was the end of the crisis. World War II was the end of the crisis. What was the beginning? 1929 stock market crash. 1929 to 1945. That's the last fourth turning. That's how long it took. What is that? 26 years? Something like that? If I'm wrong, somebody fix that for me. My mind is still on the fact that I had to walk away from the dog. I think it's 26 years. 2.5 decades, roughly. So, what does that mean? What does that mean? What it means is maybe 08 was the beginning of the crisis. So you're looking at 2028 to 2032 being the end and the beginning of a new high, if the historical pattern remains constant. Here's the thing, it doesn't. Do you know what the fourth turning was before that? It's the American Civil War, 1860 to 1865. It was a very short crisis period that was followed by a huge high. Every winter's a little bit different. And I think that the people that are in charge of your lives are practicing a form of, let's call it weather manipulation, but not HARP, right? Like seeding clouds or spraying chemtrails. I don't mean that. I mean weather modification to the turnings. Think about it. All these people are very academic, very intellectual type people that are in control. They study this stuff deeply. We like to think of them as stupid. I said stupid people are running the world. Stupid people have the public displayed positions of people in power. They're congressmen, they're senators, they're presidents, they're high-level bureaucrats. They're a woman running Secret Service who was probably way over her skis when she was guarding Cheetos. Okay? Like, that's who we see. And they are stupid. And they're stupid for a reason. They want society to be stupid. Dumbed down, Bonhoeffer type stupid. Look up Bonhoeffer's theory of stupidity. I don't have time to go into it today if you've never heard me talk about it. But if you want stupid people, you have to give them stupid leaders. Leaders are not necessarily controllers. Leaders are the ones that point to things and talk about things. Isn't that a perfect description of a political ad? What do they always do in political ads? They point at stuff and they talk, right? They stand in front of rooms. They show big rallies. Woohoo! And then they go to construction sites. They even put a fucking hard hat on and they point at shit. Like they're somehow involved with building the building because they put a hard hat on and pointed at a guy who is probably not even, at a construction site. It's probably fucking green screen now. It's the same shit. So they need stupid people to model the behavior that they want from you. That's why they put them in place. But the people that are actually controlling things, very smart. So you're a very smart person. You've studied the fourth turning. You believe in the theory. It's impossible not to believe in the theory because you look back seculum after seculum after seculum after seculum. And son of a bitch, it plays out. And you say, even if the theory itself isn't 100%, the concept works. If you take people at a point when everything's been ripped down around them and a system's no longer functioning for them, and you give them a crisis and you use it to unify them, you can rebuild society. If you know that's what you're doing, you can be the architect of what the rebuilt society looks like. Think about it. What was our latest crisis? And didn't they try to do that with it? COVID. The COVID crisis was completely artificially manufactured. From the very early days when they put a real-time death counter on the screen of every newscast. You notice they just went away? It's memory hold as fuck. If you try to look it up, you can't even find reporting on the fact that it exists. They act like it never happened. It's very hard to find any information about real-time death counting from early days of COVID. Google it. See if I'm making it up. It's very difficult. And what you will never find is the answer to this question. Where did the numbers come from? Oh, hold on. 6 months of that shit is about how long that went on before they moved on to other things that scared you. For about 6 months, they stuck this thing, and it was in every newscast. They would be talking about something totally unrelated, right? They actually had a news story to cover that wasn't COVID's, but they still had that counter there. They used it to psychologically manipulate people for 180 fucking days in a row. And no one's answered the question, where did those numbers come from? Here's what I think happened. That was they were going to use climate change. It didn't work. It didn't work. Then this happened. And whether they made it happen or not, once it happened, they went, aha, we'll call it this generation's World War II. Didn't they? Wasn't that exactly what they told you? You were like the people that lived through the Great Depression and fought World War II. This was your moment. And eventually, didn't work either. They've tried to resurrect climate change. That didn't work. What is the crisis du jour? Trans rights. See, these are not actual crises. They're trying to manufacture a crisis to create the fourth turning in the model that they see fit. And what happens when you fuck with the weather? Sooner or later, the weather fucks you back. Tom says, do I think Trump got in the way of it? A little bit. A little bit. This is why whenever anybody tells me something like Trump is a black swan, Trump is a Trojan horse, Trump is blah, 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 blah. If Trump was what you say he was, he wouldn't have been indicted like a billion times for shit that every politician has done 1,000 times worse and never got indicted for. It wouldn't have happened. If Trump wasn't a glitch in the matrix, they wouldn't tell you that January 6th was worse than Pearl Harbor Day and 9/11 put together. And still have people convinced of that. No, you wouldn't give that much resistance to somebody. You give resistance, you'd get resistance like Reagan got. Not like this. I believe Trump is this weird phenomenon that occurred. I don't think he's the second coming of Christ or some crazy stupid crap like some people think. I don't think that he's right about it. In fact, I can come up for everything I agree with that comes out of his mouth. I have something that comes out I disagree with. But I do believe this about Donald Trump. He really believes in America. And he's the generation that would. Would be your eldest boomers. They spent a lot of time with the silent and the GIs as children. And he did as a wealthy, very wealthy child. Nowhere near the wealth he's amassed, though. I mean, say what you want about him. He built a lot more wealth than his family historically had. He did the same shit every billionaire that ever developed billions of dollars in real estate did, especially in New York City. Same shit. That's not unique. What's unique is he got to a point in his life where he thought, I could be president. And he took a shot at it. And when it became real to him, he said, I actually might win this. Maybe I should actually do things that I believe are the right things for America. I should try to help Americans, the average person. Trump is a real estate guy. He's also a builder. He's a construction mogul. If you're going to do that job, even as the billionaire behind it, you have to be willing to talk to people that carry their lunch in a box to work and treat them with decency and respect. You have to be willing to do it. Go talk to your average congressman or senator, and you'll find out. They don't think that way. Again, this isn't a pro-Trump. This is just what it is. And so he's in a way, he's a lot like Vladimir Putin is for Russia. You can disagree with politics all you want. I believe that Putin does things because he believes it's best for the Russian people. You can do that and be wrong. Understand that, right? Because some people are so fucking brain dead, you can't comprehend what I'm saying. I have to repeat it different ways so that maybe you can understand it. You can be wrong, but think you're doing the right thing. It's actually a very dangerous place to be. And I believe Trump is like, fuck it, I'm going to do what I think is right for America. The guy is a patriot. Now, patriot can also be the last refuge of the scoundrel, okay? But I think he is a patriot. The man fought battles and spent millions of dollars for the right to fly an American flag long before he ever entertained running for office. He believes in America. He is not left or right. All this ultra right, super MAGA, whatever, right? That's not who he is. He's a centrist populist. And do you know what we do whenever we have a centrist populist president? Somebody tries to kill him. I would say the first centrist populist president we ever had, 7th president of the United States, Andrew Jackson. Somebody tried to kill him. He tried to beat him to death with a cane. He fought back. Fight, fight, fight. I'm just saying. He wanted to get rid of the central bank, and he did get rid of the central bank. He was voted for across the party lines that had formed by that point in America's history. He was popular with everybody except Indians. Right? He was. You don't have to like him or like his policies, but that's who he was. He was a populist. He stirred up something in American public that crossed these lines. Next one, I would say, would have been Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was shot while getting ready to give a speech. Seems kind of similar, doesn't it? He had a 50-page speech. Ballistics weren't quite what they are today. He got shot through the speech. It slowed the bullet down enough that it made him bleed, but it didn't actually mortally wound him. And standing there bleeding, he gave his speech. Yeah. You don't have to like him. I'm just telling you, right? If you ask me my preferred Roosevelt, it would be bear over chair. I'll leave it at that, right? Which Roosevelt, bear or chair? I'll take the bear, all right? Next populist president. Next true populist president in the United States. Person that went across all lines, unified a country in turmoil. Everybody loved him. JFK. They didn't just try to kill him. They did. And I'm not going to get into the conspiracy theories behind JFK or whatever. I'm just telling you, the guy was a populist. They tried to kill him. I think you can make a case that at least on some level, Reagan was a populist. Look at the 1984 electoral map and tell me he was not. Somebody tried to kill him. It wasn't politically motivated, but it did happen. And the next person I would say after Reagan that was a populist, Trump. He wasn't in office running for re-election. Somebody tried to – I'm just saying it happened that way, right? The aberration in there, if there is another – I think that's every populist the country's ever elected, other than maybe Washington, which it doesn't count. First guy doesn't count. The only person in that I can think of that you might call a populist was Eisenhower that nobody tried to kill. Was Eisenhower. Everybody liked Ike. He ran as a Republican, either party would have taken him like that fast. He's the one out. But anyway, here's what I got to say to wrap things up. The fourth turning is coming. It's also already here. the crisis, no matter how much they want to make it climate change, no matter how much they tried to make it a pandemic that wasn't, no matter how much they try to make it, it's about the rights of 0.5% of people who, if you took care of individual rights, would have them anyway. The crisis is ongoing and it's economic. We have, since 1913, ignored the laws of economics in this country. We've definitely ignored them since 1933. And then we further ignored them starting in 64. But in 1971, Richard M. Nixon, who was also a populist go look at the re-election results for Nixon. He was one of the most popular presidents of the last 100 years. They killed him politically, didn't they, instead of with a bullet. Okay? But Nixon made a huge error, but it wasn't an error of his making. It was an error of his time. He had to do what he did. We had run a scam since World War II with issuing more dollars than we had gold, and France called our bluff, and the only way to stop the bleeding was to close the gold window. But that had a consequence, and that consequence led all the way up to today. And today, $34 trillion in debt, we pay more interest on the debt than we do for any other single expense anymore except Social Security and the Department of Defense. And I think this year we will outspend on interest on the debt our entire budget for the Department of Defense. It's crazy. And this is already happening, and it must come to fruition, and it will be an economic calamity that will be our crisis. It will not be that the earth is too warm or too cold. It will not be that a trans person has to use the bathroom of their birth. It will not be a cold that they told you was the most deadly virus ever that was going to wipe out billions of people. It won't be manufactured, but it already has been created. That's what you need to plan for. An economic unraveling, an economic reset. And somebody here said Bitcoin fixes this. Maybe. Maybe. Bitcoin plays a role in the rectification. But there has to be a reset. There's no way around this. You can't do what we've done for as long as we've done and not eventually somebody has to pay the bill. And this is why the millennials and Gen Zs are pissed. They're getting the bill. They're getting the bill. They don't understand that the boomers are also getting the bill. Gen X, we've been paying the fucking bill for 30 years. These idiot kids, and it's not their fault that they're idiots, but these idiot kids that say the boomers took everything, they're talking about two generations back from the boomers. They're talking about the people that were like the age of actors on freaking Leave It to Beaver, and not Beaver, the old man and the old lady. That's who had the beautiful life that you think the boomers had, and they think that Gen Xers are boomers. I get called a boomer every fucking week. Anytime I say anything other than, oh, poor little you. Anytime I say something like, look, if you want a better life, you're going to have to build it for yourself. Okay, boomer. Bitch. Like, the only thing that bothers me about it, I don't care personally. I just feel bad for the person saying it. Like, you couldn't tell me more that you don't understand where you are in the world today than saying that. The ignorance you demonstrate when you tell a 50-year-old person that they're a boomer, and out of your next breath, you talk about boomers being able to raise a family on one income. And here's an interesting thing to me. They all hate the boomers. Boomers, boomers, boomers. Where'd all your feminist bullshit that you love, who did it? Who did it? Who gave you modern feminism that you love? Boomers. Who fought more for gay rights than any other demographic out there? Because Gen X, we didn't get, like, hey, we're the generation with Dice Clay, right? 10% off Vaseline and get back in the closet, right? That was a legit joke that we laughed at when we were kids. We didn't care. We didn't care. Like, be gay, I don't care. Be black, I don't care. Be white, I don't care. Like, we don't care. The boomers fought for all the shit you have now that you say you want. The boomers expanded Social Security, which you don't want now because you're paying into it, but you sure as hell want it for yourself later on. It's a failed system, but they're the ones that did it. The boomers expanded welfare. The boomers did the Civil Rights Act. All the shit that you say you want, all the social programs, all the women's liberation, all of the integration of races, all of it, boomers gave it to you and now you're spitting on them because they didn't tie the bow right when they wrapped up the box and handed it to you because shit's expensive. Like, it doesn't hurt them. Every generation after the GIs has been paying this bill. You're not the only ones. You're just hitting it when you're supposed to be hitting your stride. And we all are in the same boat, and we all will collectively have to unite behind it. We all will have to rebuild. And we will forestall longer than typical, and it may be the case that this is a fifth turning. That's something I'm going to tell you I don't think even the author of that book will. We may have created such an aberration that the boomers will be gone instead of the elders. Gen X may be your elders. And if that is the case, may God have mercy upon your souls. Because we still don't care. We don't. We believe the way to fix things is to let people fix their own shit. You could hate us for it, but the longer they forestall things, the longer you get to a point where your elders, your people that are real power brokers in the world, are going to say, if thou wants thy life fixed, fix it thyself. And that might be the best way to go. Anyway, with that, I want to wrap things up. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Interesting kickoff to a Monday. I didn't expect to go this long, but for some reason, I seem to be doing this over and over again. I'm going to really try to rein things in and go a little bit shorter with my shows in the future. Real quick here at the end, I want to remind you guys, if you like the show and the work that we do and you want to help us out, you can do that by starting your online shopping at tspaz.com. Well, that dark shit. How about something a little bit better? How about a great way to make a good cup of coffee, a good cup of tea, brew up your next batch of mead or beer? Because you might want to start making shit for yourself at home. Whether it be, you know, making that great French press of coffee instead of spending $4 at Starbucks or $5 now, whatever it is. Or if you want to make that really great mead instead of buying a $25 bottle of wine and what have you, then this electric kettle, believe it or not, will help you with all of those things. I love this thing. It has a whole bunch of different settings on it for setting the exact temperature of water you want, from 160 degrees all the way up to a full boil. And different things do better at different temperatures. You can even make perfect soft-boiled eggs with it. The write-up tells you all about it, and it is on sale today. So you might want to check it out. I have been through a number of these electric kettles, and this is my favorite one so far. You can find everything I recommend, as always, at tspaz.com, including you will be able to locate at tspaz.com everything that I've ever reviewed in alphabetical order by category. So you can look up and see if it will help you, and you will help us out no matter what you buy. Just start your shopping there. That's all you have to do. I also recommend that you consider helping us out by becoming a member of the MSB. I don't push that as much as I really should, honestly. It's a great program. I've been running it since 2009, and I've really never had anybody complain about it at all. If you ask for a refund, I just give you one. It's $50 a year. Use the benefits, save your money, get your money back, and help support the show. And then you can say you are truly a community member because you are an MSB member, a member of the support brigade. With that, I'll catch you tomorrow with a whole different thing. We're going to do something practical tomorrow versus looking at all these problems. With that, take care, guys, and I will catch you tomorrow with that episode.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.